The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning, everybody, as we welcome you to the latest edition of a numbers game presented by DraftKings from downtown Las Vegas, our studio here at Bar Canada at the D. There was one other patron, Kelly Bidlin, when we walked in. There's now none, but that's okay. We're here to get the week kickstarted. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil Alexander the next few days, and we've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, it's a little different than Sunday afternoons when we're in here together, Ben. Yeah, a little less people. I like it. It's nice.
You do like it. You aren't having to yell the Sunday.
That's
you
right.
You usually do. There's the pan shot. If you want to come visit us, we could use some company over the next 2 hours, but you know. Minimal company, I suppose. We have a lot to talk about today, Kelly, because since the last edition of the show, NBA Finals now set, some early line movement on the odds. We also have a Stanley Cup Final that we'll break down here in just a second. College baseball regionals are now well underway. Several true winner-take-all games today. By tomorrow, we'll have the full Super Regionals set. French Open continuing on. I've got a little two-player money line parlay that gets underway in just over an hour as we are into the round of 16 at the French Open, week deux, at the French Open. Some NFL headlines here right off the top because Justin Jefferson has gotten that bag, and it's funny how we talk over the weekend. There were a couple of wide receivers who got extensions going into the weekend, including Jalen Waddle in Miami, who at the time, fourth highest paid wide receiver by average annual value. Well, you can now make that fifth, because Justin Jefferson, 4 years, $140 million, over 100 of that is guaranteed. And so after last year, he turns down a contract that would have paid him less than $30 million a year. Now he is paid off by not signing that. He's up to $35 million a year. And it makes sense, Kelly, to do this now when you consider how amazing Jefferson has been, averaging nearly 100 yards receiving a game in his career so far. And also now just the uncertainty here. Minnesota in a very, very good division with a whole lot of question marks here at quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you're the Minnesota Vikings, you've probably been watching what the Cowboys have chosen to do with Dak Prescott here for a while now, right? And get out in front of this and just give the guy his money now before that asking price just gets higher and higher and higher. I think this was timely for a couple reasons. I think that reason, also the reports that started to circulate end of last week, right, that the Vikings were considering trading up in the draft and that possibly meant sending Justin Jefferson out of town. I don't really know how there I am on those reports, Ben. It's hard for me to grasp trading a guy of Justin Jefferson's caliber. But look, coming back to Minnesota now, this is going to be a new look Vikings team with a new quarterback. And man, it feels like a very new NFC North just overall from where we've come from, 2-3 years ago.
Well, now you have Minnesota. They're bringing up the rear here. A lot of that is due to the Sam Darnold, J.J. McCarthy combo there at quarterback. And you are right on the Justin Jefferson front, where Dallas going with the "we're all in, but we're not all in" strategy,
right,
which was an ambitious play, to say the least. I asked Mike Somich about that yesterday when we were hosting together. Mike will be one of our guests today, a Monday regular here coming up in our second hour. Since he's a poker player, I'm like, did you ever do that, Mike? Did you ever say I'm all in and then just not push your chips in the table? And he's like, yeah, that's not how it works when you play poker.
You could say it. They'll push your chips in for you, basically.
I mean, basically, right. It's sort of like in that arena, you sort of have to. But I'm left wondering, at least on the Minnesota front, and you obviously make the right decision here. You keep your biggest asset in your franchise, but it's sort of like a now what with the Sam Darnold brought in, meant to kind of be a placeholder until J.J. McCarthy is ready. Darnold's about a $2 favorite to be the week one starter here. Does this turn into, worst-case scenario, Kelly, a Larry Fitzgerald trying to catch passes from John Skelton and the like in the late 2000s? Or does this at least become a thing where, because Jefferson is such a good talent above all else right now in the NFL, he is able to raise his quarterback's level to another dimension and at least keeps Minnesota competitive? I'd naturally lean toward the latter, but I'd be lying if I said there's a whole lot of holes here that the Vikings still have work to fix.
Yeah, no, I actually think look, the Larry Fitzgerald example is probably the closer to a doomsday example,
well,
right,
yes,
for this Minnesota team. But Of course, that's within the realm of possibility, right? You have to have, how often do we say, if you don't have a quarterback in this league, you don't have anything. And right now, Minnesota doesn't really know what they have, right? You think that they've got a rookie quarterback who's going to come in here and do great things. How long is that going to take, though? I don't think he's going to start the season. So I think it's Sam Darnold to start, and then we go from there. It's Justin Jefferson. I mean, he might have to battle through a season or two before this offense really starts to click. And again, not an easy division. We see where the Lions are at now, one of the better teams in the NFC. A lot of love for the Packers for what they did last year and what they should be returning with this season. The Bears right now have even got odds that are way shorter than this Vikings team, which is probably fair from a roster. I think it's a little closer than the odds dictate with the Bears and Vikings. I don't think the Vikings should be that much longer than where the Bears at. Yeah, 10-1 in the division odds. Bears plus 265 right now over at DraftKings. I don't think there should be that big a separation between those two. I think rightfully so. You could say the Vikings have the fourth best roster in this division, but I do think this is going to be one of the more wild divisions in the NFL this year. Neither of those top teams, Ben, do I truly, I'm still not as high on the Lions as everybody was a year ago, right? And I think I was wrong about that. But I still don't know if I'm 100% sold on that team. And I'm not 100% that the Packers are going to be able to completely replicate what they did a year ago. Or let me at least not take another step forward. I think maybe what we saw last year is very much what they'll be again this season. So I think it could be an interesting division with some tightly bunched teams in the standings.
Let's not forget Chicago, the hype that's around them and quarterback Caleb Williams. They'll be on Hard Knocks. Whenever you have hype divisions like this, though, Kelly, you can't have three teams that go 13-4. It's just
that's
not
right,
how
yeah.
the math works. As not much as people
happen.
Want that to happen. Justin Jefferson, I just pulled this up on the DraftKings regular season receiving yards prop, 1,275.5. He was well on pace for that before injuries last year. Was already over 1,000 in 10 games a season ago, went over 1,800 in 2022. But the obvious caveat now is it's not Kirk Cousins throwing him the football.
Right, yeah. And worth pointing out, just looking at strength of schedule stuff, Vikings with the fifth toughest based off of win total. So something to keep in mind that will be absolutely a difficult schedule to get by this year.
For now, it's Minnesota in general, betting-wise, it's a stay away from me when you think about all the success in 2022 with all the great positive variance that went their way.
Right.
And then last year, the struggle, 7-10, yet so much negative variance. It was almost like the pendulum swung comically far the other direction to the point where by the end of the season, I at least felt like Minnesota was being undervalued in the market, yet they just kept on losing games, and then you had injuries, and it all just kind of went to hell. But that's at least the case for Justin Jefferson. 4 years, $140 million, that's the latest news here around the NFL. As far as what we're now talking about today here, Kelly, with the game last night that closed out the Sunday card, it was a very fun game. Stuart Skinner and the Edmonton Oilers, they get the job done. And I lead with Stuart Skinner, I don't say Connor McDavid first, Kelly, because the Oilers had a whopping 10 shots in that game against the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
And Skinner, who was much maligned, one of the worst, a bottom five individual postseason a goaltending run last year as far as goals saved above expectation. He was way in the negatives as the Oilers struggled with goaltending and general defense. Well, that is totally flipped now. Skinner over 7 goals saved above expectation this playoff run, and it continued last night, facing a barrage from Dallas. Edmonton wins it 2-1 under Cashes, and now it's the Oilers who square off with the Florida Panthers, your opening line here. Florida minus 130 and the Oilers plus 110.
Yeah, I was watching that game last night. You can't help but notice the shot discrepancy, and yeah, it did finish. It finished 35-10 is what it was. Yeah,
not
35-10. So yeah, pretty incredible.
That happened. The one thing I can't help but think about with Edmonton, where they are this team. Basically, the Edmonton Dallas was a battle of who was trying to get over the hump to the promised land. Dallas had come up short so many times in the postseason. Did have one cup final appearance, but lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning a few years ago. Edmonton always plagued by lack of goaltending and defense. And now that they've found that, Kelly, you have to consider them live with the changes here in Skinner and how much better and more effective he has been as a goaltender. But I also can't help but think about another team who had a hot goaltender who was playing with a ton of confidence in the New York Rangers, and what the Florida Panthers made them look like in a 6-game series win, where honestly, the Rangers, if you look at all the advanced numbers and metrics, were awfully fortunate that series even went 6 games. Now you're also dealing with a super veteran Florida group that went to a cup final last year, and ended up losing in five to the Vegas Golden Knights, but who has a goalie in Sergei Bobrovsky. You think about it, advanced stats, Kelly, and some of these goaltenders. You think about some of the great two-year runs. You go back to Andrei Vasilevsky with the Tampa Bay Lightning when they won their back-to-back cup titles. I was just pulling this up earlier. He was Vasilevsky was at plus 31 goals saved above expectation in those 2 years, which is a lot. You look at Igor Shesterkin for the Rangers, who was on a heater all this postseason and was very good last postseason. He was plus 25.5 over the last two postseason runs. Sergei Bobrovsky for Florida last year, the cup final, and now this year, plus 27 goals saved above expectation.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So he is right up there with the elite of the elite goaltenders, and that's why Florida is supremely built, A, with the goaltending, and B, with their team defense to counteract the Edmonton speed, which has given so many teams problems in this postseason. And it is why I would not bet Florida, because I'm just staunchly a keep the cup out of Canada guy, but because this Florida team continues to be somewhat disrespected. All the bettors that went against them in the last round against the Rangers, buying into the feel-good story. I'm sure you'll see a lot of that with the whole Canada, Connor McDavid angle. First time the Oilers have been in the cup in decades. But it is justified to me that the Panthers are $1.30 favorites, and we'll have Jay Kahn, SiriusXM NHL analyst, on with us later, see if he agrees with me. But I do feel like Florida is the play here for the final.
I'm interested to see what Jake's got to say, because he's been high on Edmonton kind of throughout this entire run. So I know he's been backing him along the way here. So interesting to hear what he has to say on this matchup. What did you say? You're in the camp of keep the cup out of Canada?
Yeah, haven't you heard that? That's the thing that's been going back decades.
Wait, so like what? We're supposed to take American pride in stealing their
trophy? It was really a joke, but it was...
Yeah. I feel so bad for the Canadians. It was a
hashtag back in the early 2010s. It was literally hashtag keep the cup out of Canada. I'm a subscriber to that.
If either of these teams, I feel like I kind of have to root for the Panthers, but like no,
you
like,
do.
I want to see Edmonton win. I want to see the cup go back to Canada. Those poor guys.
We'll have Jay Kahn coming up in about half an hour. Up next, though, Mark Borcher kicks off our guest list to talk some Major League Baseball on the other side.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Act now and save big for a limited time. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price. Normally $240 a year, you can now subscribe for just $199, and we'll throw in an extra month for free. That is 13 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets, real-time betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Don't miss this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now and use promo code ANG to claim your discount and bonus month. This special deal won't last long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe today and use promo code ANG. Coming up this hour, Jay Kahn, SiriusXM NHL, in 30 minutes to break down the Stanley Cup Final. We'll dive into the French Open, Kelly, in 15 minutes. Alex de Minaur, a game away from pulling the quote-unquote seeding upset over Daniil Medvedev and booking himself a place in the quarterfinals. We'll get a little two-team moneyline parlay in there as well in 15 minutes. That is yet to go off, so we'll discuss that next. But right now, we welcome in our pal Mark Borchard at Base Winner. Joins us every single Monday as we got to our progressive guest line. And welcome in, Mark. You know, Mark and I, Kelly, were in the last segment just having a great spirited discussion on the cadence of Major League Baseball broadcasters, which I think is a great discussion to have. I know Mark has thoughts as we welcome him in, Mark, because you watch a lot of baseball, probably more than most, I think it's fair to say.
I do. I listen to a lot on the radio. I actually like listening to it better on the radio. In fact, I think that you could have a segment one of these days, because there's a lot of free time here between now and when the football season starts. Maybe you guys could actually rate, and you would be good because you're an actual broadcaster, a good broadcaster, and you would actually be a good I would listen to a whole hour show on rating baseball broadcasters personally.
Now that would be a great show. I'm glad that Mark would be a viewer of that, maybe the only one, because I don't know how that would work, Kelly. But I'm all in that camp, Kelly. You got to make some. Kelly's very important here at the network. You can maybe make some calls.
Ben, you're my favorite play-by-play guy. Okay, come on. Any list starts and ends with you. Okay?
Oh, what a that's
it's like Joe
well,
Buck and the
really
new.
Good. You know what? I hate to be an ass kisser, but he is really good. I've heard him do play-by-play, and he's excellent.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Yeah, we don't like ass kissers, but
you would be in the top ten if I had a baseball rating. So you know who I'd like was listening to and I don't know what you think, but John Miller. He's just classic, and he was calling
great.
The Dovell break meltdown yesterday, and I thought he did a really good job on calling the Camilo Duval meltdown yesterday.
I would say Sunday Night Baseball has not been the same since the John Miller, Joe Morgan team was broken up and no longer exists. John Miller still on the San Francisco Giants broadcast team, but yeah, I think Sunday Night Baseball. I think John Miller. And that is the first of our many broadcasting discussions we'll have with Mark Borchardt, Kelly. I can't wait for this whenever I'm on here on Mondays. You talk about San Francisco Giants who are struggling right now. You talk about the bullpen, but I want to go to teams that are playing really well right now because we have a number of streaking teams here for a variety of reasons. And one series, I want to ask you specifically about the game tonight, Mark, because Milwaukee hasn't named a starting pitcher yet, but what do you make of this Brewers-Phillies series where the crew just sweep the awful White Sox who found new ways to lose multiple games over the weekend? And then Philadelphia, who is riding this incredible streak, 40-18 here coming in. What do you make of the matchup here? Your two teams who were both unexpected to be division leaders at this stage, but both now with healthy 7-plus game leads in their divisions.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was higher than most on the Brewers before the season started, and I think I have them at either plus 650 or plus 600, and I didn't think that they would have a 7.5. I was like more bullish on them than the average guy, and I didn't think that they'd have a 7.5 game lead. In fact, they have the biggest lead in baseball of all the teams leading their division, and I don't think you could have predicted that prior to the season on June 3rd. The Brewers would have the biggest lead, and the Phillies, they just keep hitting and getting really good pitching I think it's expected to get a really, like, you talk about a low variance, you know, high production guy with Zach Wheeler, so that's no surprise. But Suarez to me has been very surprising. So I don't know. I personally, my numbers are real high on the Braves. I think the Braves can still get there and win that division, but this Phillies team, I like them to make the playoffs, did not like them to win a division. This particular game here, that the two starters I have, as we just talked about, Wheeler against Bryce Wilson, I have it priced at minus 132, and it's hard to get a price on this particular game. I don't know if I'm going to be playing much on this game on this series. I think it's one of those series where I want this Brewers team to kind of prove it to me. I mean, I've got them rated ahead of the Phillies offensively. I have them fifth in baseball, and that takes a look at 500 plate appearances for each guy in that lineup. So it's a pretty decent sample. And I mean, they've been surprising, honestly. I mean, it's kind of hard to say that they're the fifth best offense in baseball, really.
Yet the numbers don't lie so far, at least on the Milwaukee Brewers 7-game lead over the Cardinals. Phillies 41-19. I correct myself on that on the record now. 6.5 game lead over Atlanta. And we get into this every year, Mark, especially now you're into the month of June, right? We've had a good amount of sample size. And for the preseason favorites in respect to divisions like in Atlanta, who are off to slow starts by their lofty standards, this is always, it seems like, the natural time to go, all right, There are times you pick out maybe a buy low opportunity, and Atlanta is now nearly 2-1 to win their division here, Mark. If you had not had a preseason bet on the Braves, which many did, and you were sitting in here just clean slate as far as a betting portfolio, is that a team you would advocate for, or is there a different team here who has gotten off to a slow start that you would say is a better bet value-wise to make a comeback and earn their way back a spot in the division crown?
No, I think that if you don't have any money in that NL East, I think that the Braves would be a good bet. In fact, I have them winning this division. And what I do is I do a Monte Carlo simulation with the remainder of the schedule, whatever they've done to date, and it takes a look at the relief ratings, the starter ratings, and the ratings offensively and from fielding defensively, and it just simulates the season. And I've got the Braves winning more than 50% of the time. So if you can get that kind of price with them, I would advocate that. I think that, you know, offensively, even with Acuna out, there's still and he really, you subtracted a lot. It was almost a third of a run from production when you took out Acuna from the lineup. But even with that, they're still higher than the Phillies. The Phillies are seventh. The Braves are third-ish, depending on the split that you're looking at. And then I think that, one of the things that we don't look at is the quality of the bullpen when we're trying to simulate these seasons. And that's one of the things I think that when you simulate the season in a Monte Carlo simulation, it picks up that bullpen quite a bit, because you got to think, these bullpens are getting at least half the game. And so I'm high still on the Braves bullpen, and I'm high on the Twins bullpen. I think the Twins bullpen's one of the better ones in baseball. So those are the two teams that I still think are a little bit undervalued in the future market.
Meanwhile, I remember listening to your quarterly pod with Gil on his show here a few weeks ago, talking about Houston still being relatively undervalued. They come in today, 7.5 back now of the streaking Mariners, 26-34. Send Justin Verlander to the bump tonight against the St. Louis Cardinals, who have been now a 500 team after a recent surge in form here. What do you make just of the, not of the Astros necessarily in general, but you know, Justin Verlander is a guy now who, 5 of the last 6 years since he moved to Houston, he has outperformed, his ERA has outperformed his expected fielding independent pitching, such a savvy veteran presence on the mound. What do you make of some of his numbers this year, which once again suggests some negative regression, but we're so used to seeing Verlander pitch above that that it wouldn't surprise us for him to see another near 3 ERA.
Yeah, that's a really good observation. In fact, he's kind of baffled me because as somebody who likes to bet on expected regression, he doesn't do that, at least all the time. And I think that, you know, sometimes you have a pitcher that, and you hate to say, well, it's just a quality of his spirit, whatever, if you're a metric handicapper, but maybe the guy just outperforms his advanced metrics. But you're talking about this Astros team, and I don't necessarily know if it's time to dismantle or time to get real sour on this team. You're still looking at a seventh in baseball bullpen, the third best offense in baseball by my numbers. But I think what was interesting, I think this is the first time that Seattle has shown that they're the favorite to win this division. And it's really kind of a three-way race. I think everybody has about a 30 to 35% chance by my simulations, Houston, Seattle, and Texas. So it depends on, you know, what you want to get from a value standpoint. But I think Houston's in there like a plus 300 right now. I think that's still a pretty decent play.
Mark Borchardt joining us here on A Numbers Game. Follow him at Base Winner, Pro Baseball Better. Mark, for the lighter Monday card today, anything you already have here in pocket?
You know, I'm going to play on the Padres today, and I normally don't bet run line plays, but I'm going to bet the Padres -1.5. I think you can get them at plus 120. And I think with these knuckleballers, and I've seen it over the years, I've been watching baseball probably 40 years, man. Gosh, wow. And sometimes when these knuckleballers have it, they're really hard to hit. And when they don't have it, they're really easy to hit. So I think if you play the Padres here, my model has it at minus 192. The money line is minus 136 in the market. I think if you play the Padres, though, you play it on the run line. Waldron's strikeout numbers have been pretty good his last two games. And I think we get a huge edge offensively. This Angels team, 22nd in baseball offensively versus the Padres, 8th in baseball.
DraftKings best number in the market there, plus 124 on the Padres. Pro Baseball Better and MLB broadcast aficionado. Mark Borchardt, that's what I would like to, tee you up on, Mark. Follow him at Base Winner. Good to see you as always, pal. Best of luck on the bets today.
Thanks, man. Have a good day.
Absolutely. We will, because we're about to dive into some French Open tennis. Alex de Minaur has just punched his ticket into the quarterfinal. We'll talk about two players I like to get to the quarters when we come back.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This segment of A Numbers Game is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, America's number one nicotine pouch. Zyn is smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free, and can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. Whether you're managing your fantasy lineup on the go, watching the game from the stands, or from your couch, you can get the nicotine satisfaction you want with Zyn. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
We continue on the Monday edition of A Numbers Game. I hear from Bar Canada at the D. Thanks to Mark Borchardt at Base Winner for joining us. He likes Matt Waldron of the Padres today on the run line, plus 142 there on the road against the lefty Tyler Anderson and the LA Angels. It led Kelly and I into talking during the break about the rise and fall of knuckleball pitchers. Not many left anymore.
How many are there?
I don't think there's many. It's okay. Like, count them on one hand.
I was like, it might be me. Like, on starting rotation.
This was in Tim Wakefield's heyday. It's early 2000s. I'm in Little League Baseball, and I'm pitching, and I'm like, you know what would be fun? Just throw a knuckleball.
Yeah, give it a shot.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Never tried it before. I throw one. It was obvious what I was trying to do. It got like halfway to the mound.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, I look to my right. I see our coach just doing the slow, like the slow walk out. He's got his head down, just doing the like hands on hips, like the kind of the
Wilson. If you ever try that again,
he comes out, brings whole infield in. He's like, "Hey, Ben, never throw that. Just throw strikes." Turns around, walks.
Did you pitch in high school?
I don't know. Yeah, I was a high school. I was a situational lefty in high school. Which, if you're a situational lefty in high school, you're probably not very good. But what would happen was they would bring me in after the guy who threw really hard because I was topping out at like 72, and so a lot of weak contact. And dad was like, "Look, you know, Jamie Moyer made it to the big leagues, and he couldn't throw very fast." I'm like, "Well, I feel like he could at least throw like 87."
Yeah.
Like I'm going to need a little more beef on the fastball.
Where was Matt Brown at? Mid-80s? Is that where we think he was topping out?
I think Matt Brown could top out like low 90s, but
no way. Are you serious?
I think he could get to 90.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you not remember we did a VSiN party at Dave & Buster's where there was that radar gun thing? And our lead engineer, Ken Sports.
I was going to say, all I remember is Ken.
Was unreal. And Matt Brown, like, basically threw out his arm. But he was willing to do it to prove he could throw really fast. And I don't remember what it clocked at. It wasn't, like, an official thing. But it was definitely, like, high 80s.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're talking very scientific here. The Dave & Buster's pitching machine.
Yeah, because that's certainly on an analytics show, no less. We really trust the Dave & Buster's, the pitching radar.
Did you do play-by-play while you pitched?
Wilson
winds up.
Well, that was my issue because in my head I always had that broadcaster's mentality, which is not good when you're actually playing.
I think it would be hilarious.
Honestly, that killed me in tennis because in tennis I would be like, all right, like 40-30, massive point in my head. And, of course, in your head you're supposed to be thinking, all right, serve in, second shot. Like you're supposed to be thinking all these things, and I would just be doing the broadcast in my head. So that explains why I didn't have a pro career. Only that, you're Kelly. It was no other reason why.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of tennis here, French Open, big upset win for Alex de Minaur, although he was getting a lot of respect in the market today. He was a short dog to Daniil Medvedev, who has been a perennial struggler on clay. De Minaur into the quarters. He'll face the winner of Alexander Zverev and Holger Rune, which gets underway later today. I do like Zverev, Kelly, in that match, who something that has been maybe under-discussed is how Zverev, for being just this power server, hugely imposing figure, his game is shockingly translated really well on clay, which you wouldn't think a big server like Zverev would do so. This draw has opened up really nicely for Zverev, who dispatched the injured Rafael Nadal in straight sets in round number one. I like Zverev to get through this quarter and at the very least give Novak Djokovic a very, very good run. Djokovic has looked very shaky so far. He needed five sets to get past Lorenzo Musetti in a match that ended at 3:09 a.m. the other night. He's playing Francisco Cerúndolo. They just got underway right now there on Philippe Chatrier on center court there at the French Open. But Zverev today, he's about a $2.70 favorite. So I'd like Zverev overall here to continue to advance over Holger Rune, who's only winning about 101 combined serve and return points. Zverev is winning over 40% of return points, which is very, very good, and is at about 108.5% on his combined points won. A big, big edge there over Rune, who's been very inconsistent so far. He's a young player with a ton of upside, but just has not been able to put it together, especially with deep runs at slams to this point. So I like Zverev today. I'll pair him with not a king of clay, but kind of like a prince of clay, Kelly. Casper Ruud, very, very good on clay. He's been a French Open finalist in the past before losing to Rafael Nadal. He gets the American Taylor Fritz, whose clay court numbers have actually gotten a ton better. Fritz is not that far off. His numbers are almost as good as Ruud's are on clay, which is really impressive. But the experience here is the difference for Ruud, who has the tool bag to take out Taylor Fritz, the American, who's played a lot of long matches so far in his run-up. That is a match that gets underway in about 45 minutes with Taylor Fritz and Casper Ruud. They're both about minus 270 favorites. I got this talked about this yesterday on the handle when it was minus 104 on the two-player Moneyline Parlay. You pay a few more pennies now, more like minus 110, 115, but that is still the way I would attack it today, men's side of the French Open. Those are two round of 16 matches there, Kelly.
I like it. Yeah, we're getting to the good stuff in the tournament. It is
we are.
It's wild, the men's side just feels a little. It still feels a little bit more wide open. I want to ask you about some of these futures odds that we're looking at. Obviously, these will be adjusted after today's action with everybody playing. Some of the big names in action today. I keep saying I'm going to bet Djokovic. I still haven't bet Djokovic yet. What do you think on Novak right now? He had to play a five setter over the weekend. You worried about him?
I am.
Yeah.
I am. And I'm somebody who last year, I mean, if you go back to last year, the odds, everybody was expecting that to be the passing of the guard. Carlos Alcaraz was a pre-tournament favorite when he was yet to do it at the Grand Slam level. Novak Djokovic was still in very, very good form. That's the difference between last year and this year. I mean, Djokovic lost a match to a player outside the top 100 before a final. He played a tournament in Geneva he had never played before because he was clearly so concerned about his level of play. Didn't even win that tournament, which was an ATP 250 level event. That's like Jon Rahm being like plus 150 favorite at the whatever Spanish tournament.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Like that's the
and
sort
missing
of
missing the cut.
And
yeah.
Missing the cut. That's sort of the equivalent there. What happened with Novak Djokovic? So last year he was still in great form, but the market was just assuming Alcaraz was at another level. This year, you know, the pricing isn't all that far off Djokovic and Alcaraz, yet the form is just not even close to being there. And that's why I give Zverev a very good chance on that top half of the draw. Zverev is 8-1. And again, that's coming into today. Were he to advance, that would shorten. But Zverev will be a dog to Djokovic, but it will not be the size of dog that Zverev and players of his ilk have been to Djokovic in the past. I certainly give him a very good puncher's chance to win that if it were to be a semifinal between Zverev and a Djokovic.
All right, power rank this men's side for me then right now. Is it Alcaraz 1 for you, Rude 2?
It is, no, I would say it is Alcaraz, I would actually say it's Alcaraz 1, Sinner 2, but they're on the same half of the draw. Both Alcaraz and Sinner had major injury question marks coming in. And Sinner looked very shaky to start yesterday. He dropped his opening set as a near 1,000 favorite against Corentin Moutet, the Frenchman lefty, then won the next three sets convincingly. With Alcaraz and Sinner, if they prove to me they are healthy, which it seems as this tournament has gone on, both have not had any real health scares so far. Alcaraz beating Felix Auger-Aliassime yesterday in straight sets. As Alcaraz will face Stefanos Tsitsipas in the quarters tomorrow, Sinner will face Grigor Dimitrov. Those are, to me, still the top two favorites. I would then, you know, I think to me it's very, very tight. Djokovic, Zverev, Rude. And I've heard some smart tennis bettors say, look, Rude, the value there as a double-digit shot, who's on the bottom half of the draw, is not a bad play there. I don't necessarily disagree, especially when you compare those three being very, very close. And all being kind of, to me, in the same range. I'd say it's like 3A, 3B, 3C between Djokovic, Zverev, and Rude. And that's just simply based on the current form right now. I need to see more out of Djokovic, and his level just is not there.
I'm staying away then, I guess. It's going to be like the first time in 5 years I haven't bet Joker at the French. I don't know why I always bet him at the French. He's always longer odds there.
In the semifinals.
I know it's on his best surface, I know.
I mean, Djokovic was plus like 170 against Alcaraz in the semifinals and was over 2-1. To win the tournament last year, but not all tournaments, not all years are created the same way.
Thoughts on the women's side? Anybody winning this thing besides Iga?
I realize this is clay, so this is Iga Swiatek. It's her surface, it's her tournament. She had the rarely seen double bagel over the weekend, 0-0 over Anastasia Potapova yesterday in the fourth round. I have weirdly become this like Aryna Sabalenka stan, though. I feel like within the tennis circles, it's not her surface. She's 4-1, looked very good today over Emma Navarro, 2-3 win over the American. But I consistently believe that Sabalenka is a lot closer to Swiatek, just in a very general sense. If we take surface out of the equation, Kelly, then most people would have you believe.
Okay.
It, to the point where on hard court surfaces or grass, I'd only make Swiatek the slightest of favorites, but this is the French Open. This is clay. Swiatek deserves to be a pretty heavy favorite. But it wouldn't be stunned here if Sabalenka gives her – if you get a Sabalenka-Swiatek final and you see Aryna Sabalenka really push Swiatek in that sense. We've already seen one big server, Naomi Osaka, nearly take Swiatek out. That was 7-5 in the third. And Sabalenka has been historically at a much higher form than Osaka over the past couple of years. So it wouldn't shock me if Sabalenka at least gives a scare to Swiatek. That's my take on the women's side.
Okay. All right. I like it.
French Open.
You're scaring a lot of people out there with the Iga tickets. Probably.
Well, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. I've said it's Gil's show. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. I love the game of Sabalenka. Swiatek still probably wins the tournament. That's all I'm saying. When we come back, Jay Kahn from SiriusXM NHL breaks down the Stanley Cup final next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sound the trumpets. It's horse racing time. So saddle up for action with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when you use promo code VSINHORSE, all one word. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Wager on your favorite horses, then watch the races live right in the app. Download the DK Horse app now. Just a quick correction from what we were talking about French Open here last segment. Casper Ruud on the top half of the draw, Kelly. So if Ruud beats Fritz today, he will take on most likely Novak Djokovic in the quarters. And that's where I give Ruud a good chance in the quarters and then would give Zverev a good chance against Djokovic if they were to meet in the semis. Just wanted to clarify that real quick. We got a tweet.
We got tweets.
I don't expect to get tweets. I mean, Gil does, but I don't expect to ever get any.
Yeah, you can.
We got a tweet. That's pretty awesome.
You could try Ben Wilson. Ben_Wilson_1 because his name is Ben Wilson, so he's got to work. He's got to work for a creative name on Twitter.
I do. Yes.
All right. Chris Jason wants me to ask you: will Tsitsipas be affected by playing doubles prior to the Alcaraz match?
I would say no. Wimbledon, they play best of five doubles, which is nuts. French Open, most other major Grand Slam tournaments, it's just best of three. Playing with his brother, Petros Tsitsipas, right now. He played mixed doubles with his girlfriend, Paula Badosa. I don't know if you knew that, Kelly, earlier.
No.
So these guys, for these top singles guys, sometimes you will see them, if they are like deep, like quarterfinals or beyond, they will sometimes pull out of the doubles. But for the most part, this is just I mean, they obviously take it seriously, but it does not require. Like, I was someone who played doubles because I wasn't any good at singles. I can tell you could play a 3.5-hour doubles match, and you're still like, you know, it's short points, it's limited movement. He will be. I would not factor that into a handicap for tomorrow.
Good to know.
I would factor in the fact he has to play Carlos Alcaraz, who looks amazing right now.
A bit bigger deal. Again, that is @Ben_Wilson_1. And I got a couple others, but they're just comical because it's everybody hating on you for not saying Iga.
Oh, really?
That Iga's going to definitely win this thing, basically.
That the -190 does not correlate to 100% probability of her winning. I'm just giving the devil's advocate. I still expect Iga Świątek to win the tournament. All right, let's go out to our Progressive guest line right now, because the Stanley Cup final, it is set. We know it will be the Edmonton Oilers representing the West against the Florida Panthers in the East. And we go to our pal Jay Kahn, who joins us from Toronto right now on the Progressive guest line to break it all down. All right, Jake, thanks so much for joining us. Big week there north of the border. Bobby Mack wins the Canadian Open. Robert McIntyre yesterday, great moment there. And Edmonton is able to come out of the West here. What was just your kind of gut reaction, first instinct here to that series price with the Panthers -130, Oilers +110?
Yeah, thanks for having me, boys. Love the tennis chat off the top here as well. I'm going to need the French Open desperately this week with no hockey until Saturday. Well, so I'm very happy that that's going on. We'll get into some golf later in the week as well. A couple of big tournaments coming up there as well. But in terms of the series price, guys, I think it's relatively fair. But at the same time, I really do like the Florida Panthers in this series. Full credit to Edmonton for getting to this position. And look, they stepped up. And I was curious last night how they were going to handle the pressure, right? It's a Canadian market. There's always a lot of extra pressure. You've got the best player in the world in Connor McDavid, one win away from making his first ever Stanley Cup final. And I think there's added pressure when you're on home ice to close it out, right? You lose that game, you got to go back to Dallas for a game 7, and all of a sudden the narrative flips very quickly. So full credit to the Oilers for stepping up, scoring a couple early goals, and just kind of hanging on to that lead last night. And I will say, Connor McDavid, we've been speculating in the media all playoffs long about how healthy he is, because in the Vancouver series, he did not look 100%. And a lot of people speculating that, you know, maybe he's got something abdominal, some sort of core injury that may need surgery in the offseason, and that he's grinding through it. But I thought he looked way healthier in the Dallas series, especially in the last couple of games. And he obviously scored a great goal last night as well. Now he gets a full week off to get ready for this series against the Florida Panthers. So that should help his health level as well. So I certainly not ruling out Edmonton with their firepower winning this series, guys, but Florida around -130, I think would be the play, at least before this series starts for me.
And how we kind of opened the show today, Jake, talking about the, you know, just the resurgence of Stuart Skinner as a netminder here, where some of the advanced stats, his goals saved above expectation, you know, last year was a bottom five single season postseason run for Skinner as far as the expected saves above expectation. He's been at about a +7. This postseason has been so much better, and the question becomes for an Edmonton team that has always needed goaltending and defense but just hasn't gotten in previous postseasons, like how much of that do you expect to continue against a Florida Panther team that is so well oiled? And when we saw what they did even against a super hot goaltender and a very hot team in the New York Rangers here in the last round, winning in six.
No, that's a good point about Skinner and the defense, Ben. I think it's a huge difference. And the reason why we're talking about the Oilers in a cup final right now, they've always had the firepower. They've always had the high-end talent. We maybe question their depth up front a little bit. We know they've had a fantastic power play for years now as well. So special teams has always been in their favor. But really, it comes down to defense and goaltending this time of the year. If you can't do that well, then, yeah, you might be able to win a round, maybe two rounds, but you're not going to be able to win three or four rounds. And I think that's something that's really improved in Edmonton. So I still question Stuart Skinner. Like, he's not a goaltender that I fully trust game to game, but I have to give him a lot of credit for what he's done so far in some big moments. And it's not been a straight line for him in these playoff guys. He's had moments where he's really struggled and we've questioned, should he be the starter? Heck, he even lost his gig there for a couple games in the Vancouver series where they had to go to Calvin Pickard. They go back to Stuart Skinner and he stepped up in some big moments, including last night. And I just think Edmonton is a much better defensive team than they've been in the entire Connor McDavid administration, right? If you look at their defensive numbers, actually both of these teams, two of the best defensive teams in the league, the second half of the season and into the playoffs. So just based off of that, we should expect some lower scoring hockey games throughout this series. And unless we get a power play heavy game, obviously that might skew things a little bit. But with how both of these teams defend, I would expect some lower scoring games in this one.
I mean, we finally saw last night a game in Edmonton, Kelly. It's 5.5 total juiced under. Like, when's the last time you saw an Edmonton playoff game at home juiced 5.5 under? But the under cashed. Edmonton only gets 10 shots on goal, yet they still win 2-1 here. Now they face the Florida Panthers. Talking Stanley Cup Final with Jay Hahn. You can follow at JayHahn4 right now on a numbers game on our progressive guest line. It makes it really interesting to me, Jake, from the Conn Smythe Trophy perspective, which is always one of those we're sort of contractually obligated to mention. But, I mean, at least for me as a bettor, I have no idea what to do here. When you've got – you can make the case, right? Three players at least on each team having a very, very good case to be made for why they should win the trophy. McDavid, because of the name recognition, is likely why he's the favorite at +220. Alexander Barkov is the slight Florida favorite at +425. Sergei Bobrovsky, who's been incredible, right behind him at +450. Where do you even start here if you were looking to recommend something for people wanting to dive into Conn Smythe?
Yeah, you're right about the name recognition in McDavid and why he would be the favorite. And the books are going to take more money on McDavid, obviously. People want to bet him in this market and think, well, if Edmonton's going to win the cup, it just makes sense. McDavid's going to win the Conn Smythe. It's going to go, hand in hand with his legacy as one of the great players of this generation. In terms of an odds play, I don't think there's much value in that number right now, especially if he is, dealing with some sort of injury. I think the week off is going to help him a lot. And like I said, he did look healthier these last couple games in the conference final. But I would pivot to Leon Draisaitl on the Edmonton side of the ledger. He's had a monster playoff so far, and there is recency bias in this award. So if it's close between those two guys in terms of their point total, but Leon has the big moments in a game five or a game six or something like that, then they might go with him for the award. Zach Hyman also has had a monster playoffs in terms of goal scoring. I mean, guys, if he has a great Stanley Cup final here, he could set the record for most goals in a playoff ever in NHL history. So that would be quite the record to have. And maybe that builds a case for Hyman as well. So I think the Edmonton side is interesting. In terms of Florida, you could go many different ways, but the number at the top is Alexander Barkov. And I think he's just been the best Panther, both ends of the ice, the entirety of the playoffs. And I think if the Panthers win it, I have a gut feeling it's going to go to Barkov. Media loves him. Everybody respects him as a two-way player in this game. So unless somebody has a monster cup final for the Panthers, I think Barkov should be the guy that receives that that beautiful Conn Smythe trophy.
He is Jay Hahn joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Yeah, so many different ways to parse this together. So many menu options right now at DraftKings. Anything else that you've looked at just early thinking might be some good value here before the next few days and people start betting this stuff a little more heavily?
Yeah, well, I think we talked about Florida and the price, -130 before. Obviously, that could change. If Edmonton wins one of the games in Florida, after two games, you're going to get a better number on the Panthers. So I think you could maybe do like a half unit play on the Panthers at -130 and then maybe wait and see how the series goes the first couple of games. And if you still feel comfortable with Florida, you can put a little bit more on a better price. I also like the Panthers -1.5 games at +160. Guys, we've only seen a couple game sevens in the Stanley Cup final over the last 15 years. Really, actually, Boston's been involved in both of them, the Boston-Vancouver Game 7 and the Boston-St. Louis Game 7. So oftentimes these cup finals, you know, they go 5-6 games. A team sometimes gasses out, maybe gets a little banged up. So if you like Florida, I think I'd be willing to lay that -1.5 games to get some plus money and say that this thing's not going to go 7.
It's a good call. I'm with you on the Panthers love as well. I'm glad we were on the same page here, Jake, as we roll in. And Kelly, it's weird.
Jake's been high on Edmonton, so I think this really tells you that Florida.
Well, it's funny. Of the three of us here, Kelly, our resident Florida man, has admitted he's rooting for the Oilers. And Jake, wow, our Canadian, is betting the Panthers.
I just want that cup to go back to Canada. I feel so bad for all the Canadians. Poor Jake and all his buddies.
I think Kelly's the only American who feels that way. Anyway, Jake, good to see you as always, man. Big week for you guys up north of the border.
Yeah, great to see you, boys. Have yourselves a nice week.
We absolutely will. We'll reset everything as we get set for hour number two right here on A Numbers Game from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.